you know, we are in a very precarious position. Even though we may feel secure, that we may feel somewhat successful, if Japan should go communist, if there is strong anti-American feelings in Japan, you know, we here in the United States will begin to pay for that kind of sentiments. I hope I answered your question. Yes, sir.
What are your thoughts on bilingual education?
The question is, what are my thoughts on bilingual education? I believe bilingual education is essential for those newly arrived immigrants or those who come from homes that have zero English or their home language is not English. I think it's essential because in our society it's a matter of survival, and if you can't read, if you can't do math, if you don't learn certain basic skills, you're going to be at a disadvantage. As it relates to the Japanese Americans, I don't believe it's a legitimate program for Japanese Americans. I think that it's sort of a enrichment program because most Japanese American children come from English-speaking homes, but I would not deny Filipinos, Chicanos, Chinese, the opportunity for bilingual, bicultural education. I think that there's some advantages in a parallel program of bilingual education with a component of English as a second language, ESL program, whereby that might assist them in learning basic English at an accelerated pace. But my personal opinion, as far as Japanese American is concerned, unless we have ample resources, unless a school district has ample resources, I think it's a luxury that we can well do without, because there are others who have greater, more acute needs. My children, incidentally, I'm second generation Japanese American. I don't speak, read, write Japanese. I'm culturally deprived. I've never been to Japan. My children, if I'm that way, you can imagine how my children are. And I would rather have my child learn, my daughters learn maybe French or Spanish. I would like them to know Japanese too, but I would be at a disadvantage if they knew Japanese and I didn't, because they could converse with their grandmother and their grandfather behind my back or in front of me and I wouldn't know what's happening. But that's my view on bilingual education. Yes, sir. That's a very good question, and I'm glad that you brought that up, because not too many Nisei think that way, and I presume you're a Nisei. As I see what is happening politically in this state, the fact that we have a congressman, Norman Mineta, we have a mayor, we have two assemblymen, we have the Department of Corrections, Jiro Enomoto, the head of consumer affairs, Mr. Takei, and a number of well-qualified Nisei in the political arena. And we see the economic status of large-scale farming, floriculture, business, and so on. It's my speculation that had there not been a relocation or evacuation, that Japanese Americans would be on par with their sisters and brothers in Hawaii, in that we would probably be in the forefront of the leadership in this state, and that our children would not have the stigma of being second-class citizens, that there would be a tremendous amount of ethnic pride as well as leadership, and that our economic base and our political base would give us the foundation for much better social relationships with our fellow Americans. Now, of course, this is speculation, but as I see the emergence of leadership in the political arena, as I see young people, third generation, doing things that us Nisei never attempted because we had some feelings of insecurity, we had some feelings of being inadequate, I certainly feel that those 4.5 years that were taken out of our lives and the economic impact of our removal and the fact that for 6 or 8 years we had to work to make up for lost time, I think our status today would be far greater than it is today. And I'm not saying that we haven't come a long way. I think we've come a long way, but I think we would even go even further. Yes, sir.
I have a fear that this can happen again. And I would like to know what it is we can do together.
I share your fear because I think it can happen again. There's no question in my mind. A month ago, President Ford and Secretary of State Kissinger made some what they call in politics trial balloons. They said, we will go to war if necessary over Mideast oil. Or they've said it this way. They've said, we have gone to war over things lesser than oil. So these are sort of the trial balloons. Now, if it should come to that, and we know, and I think some of us know, that there was CIA involvement in Chile, that there was the CIA involvement in the Bay of Pigs, and that there is a certain amount of agitation or provocative action in the internal affairs of other foreign governments. And if you read the paper this morning, former Saigon government issued letters from President Nixon that said, we will come to your aid. And it was on that promise that many of them held out as long as they did. Well, we know that. So I have no qualms about speculating that in the event that we should find an excuse for military intervention in the Mideast, that every person of Arab ancestry, every Arab student in this country, every person who's ever held a passport from any Arab nation would be under immediate surveillance, and some of them would be incarcerated just like our parents were, on the basis that the stereotype that all Arabs are dangerous, we don't know them, they're terrorists, we know from their past behavior that you can't trust them, and that we would have a very similar type of action by our government. Now that's a very fearful thing to even think about. But you know, we think that we have learned a lot in the past 33 years. At least, as I look back, as I see the civil rights movement, as I see the awareness of young people, as I see sympathetic, understanding Americans, as I see the change in public policy, you know, I think we've come a long way. But what scares me is when somebody like Congressman Talcott, you know, makes a public statement which plant the seeds of distrust, plant the seeds of hate. And I don't think there's room in our society for that kind of bigotry. Yes, sir.
Response to local criticism saying, well, they'll be dispersed throughout the country.
unfortunately, I don't have that responsibility. But since you asked me, there is no way that the federal government is going to assure local governments, state governments, county governments, city governments, that these refugees are going to be dispersed equitably throughout the 50 states, and that they would not be a burden on any one municipality or one entity of government. No way. On the contrary, I think that you will see, and historically there's evidence to show that most third world people or ethnic people, whether you be Jewish or be Irish or Catholic or whatever your origins might be, that there was always a coming together, and that coming together was sort of a self-protective, community which provided valuable services that the other agencies were not aware of. Things like language, finding a job, cooking, custom, how to shop, how to save money, how to invest, how to borrow, all those kinds of things. Preservation of culture, preservation of language, and so on. So there's going to be those kinds of coming together of those refugees. I don't care how the government disperses them. They have three camps right now, one in Florida, one in Arkansas, and one in California. I am very concerned as an Asian American as to how these people are treated, because we know from past experience that because of their physical features and because of our similarities of physical features, there's going to be that stereotype of, well, you all look alike and therefore we can't distinguish one from another. So any type of discrimination or any derogatory references to one group necessarily will reflect on the other. That's a very unfortunate situation, but it's a fact, and I am not going to go around wearing a button and say, I am a Japanese American. Don't confuse me with a Chinese, don't confuse me with a Filipino, don't confuse me with a Vietnamese. I am an American. You know, I think that would be a sad day in America if we all had to wear buttons to identify ourselves. I think one of the immediate problems that the government could do is to pass a bill which has been in Congress for two sessions now. It was authored by Representative Patsy Mink, and it's called the Gateway Cities Bill. And it was designed primarily to meet the needs of local communities who found that their taxes, their tax base, was being unfairly drained by newly arrived immigrants, namely education, welfare, social services. And there is a formula or a pro rata formula whereby the federal government would pump money into local school districts, local governments, to assist these governments give some of the services that these new arrived immigrants require. I think that if we don't do something immediately, we are going to have the same kinds of problems they have in Florida and New York with the discrimination and with the hatred towards Puerto Ricans, Cubans, and Hungarians. You know, in the last 25 years, we've brought in Cubans, Puerto Ricans, and Hungarians. And they have formed their own ghettos, or they have clustered together. And unless we as enlightened citizens begin to look at some options as how we can assist them, most of these people, if given the opportunity, will pull themselves up by their bootstraps, if I may use that analogy. They're usually hardworking, you know. They usually have high achievements, and they usually have a lot of pride. And I think that pride, you know, is going to see them accelerate much faster than some of there are other minorities in this country who have very little hope of improving their lot due to the fact that we ignore them, we exclude them from our educational system, we keep them in their place. Look at the plight of migrant workers. No way that some of those people are going to ever improve themselves. Look at third and fourth and fifth generation Indians off the reservations. One of their major problems is alcoholism, because that's the only way they can cope with their existence. Look at the recidivism we have in our prison population, because rehabilitation isn't working. And so, you know, we don't have to go far to look for these examples. And it's my personal opinion that if we don't do something, you know, it's not just going to affect the Vietnamese refugees, but it's going to affect, we're going to have the kind of backlash that's going to affect all persons of Asian ancestry. Yes, ma'am. Yes, I think that's a... Sure. Yeah. Yeah. I think that's a very valid point, that we have to be very careful, we have to be very vigilant that we are not used as the model minority, put up on this pedestal, given all of the limelight and say, look, if you work hard, if you save your money, if you educate your kids, if you sacrifice, if you don't demonstrate, if you conform to our value system, you know, you are accepted in our society. You know, I think that's very dangerous, because the other side of that, what I hear, it tells the blacks, it tells the Chicanos, it tells the poor whites, it tells the Filipinos, it tells everybody else to emulate us. And by emulating us, you know, we are being used, and it's divide and conquer. And I am in no way a revolutionary. You know, people think that I am because of some of my views, but I, you know, I'm probably very moderate compared to some Maoist-oriented or some other political references. But I personally feel that when it comes to taking our stand, we have to stand up with our third world brothers and sisters. We can't deny that we are highly visible, that we have a long history of discrimination, that we are part of minority groups who have been oppressed and are continuing to be oppressed. And I think if I can draw the analogy, the women in this audience should be able to empathize and understand our plight, because there's a very close parallel between women in our society and minorities, especially the visible minorities. We're highly visible, we're stereotyped, we have certain expectations, we have certain places, you know, and we share a lot of the same kinds of things women in our society have shared in the past. So their struggle is our struggle. And I think our total struggle, if I can be philosophical, is for a better America. That we want America to succeed, we want it to work, and we want equity, we want equality, we want justice, not just for ourselves, but we want it for all. Well, you've been extremely kind audience, and I thank you very, very much for the invitation. Thank you.